Warning. This podcast includes content for mature audiences, including themes of violence and murder. This episode features audio dramatizations based on the real life and crime of Geraldine R. Jones. Please listen with caution. You are at your family's reunion, or the cookout celebrating some holiday, or you are just around your family, always sitting amongst the women. It seems that every woman there is a wife, a mother, or both. Every woman except you. Conversations around you are about their husbands, kids, jobs, and trying to balance them all. Your palms grow sweaty and your heartbeat increases with every second because you know it's only a matter of time before they ask you those questions. Girl, when are you going to get married? Are you ever going to have kids? Your heart sinks into the pit of your stomach. It doesn't matter if you have a successful career, a blossoming business, or living your best life. You are not complete until you check off those two boxes: marriage and children. The older you get, the more pressure is applied.
You know you ain't no spring chicken.
Only white women can have babies after 40.
You know, Sister Jones down at the church has a grandson I can introduce you to.
Girl, don't let that job get in the way of your happiness.
Motherhood has always been a double-edged sword. Between Geraldine R. Jones and Samantha Fleming, the sword proved to be fatal.
Tamiko, April, look at these dresses. Aren't these adorable?
Mm-hmm.
Geraldine and her two older sisters are unpacking the gifts she received from her pink and white baby shower. All of her family and friends were in attendance to celebrate her two twin girls. She has been showered with attention and love since she revealed that she was pregnant in October of 2014.
I am so excited for you and Randy.
I know, I'm excited too.
Speaking of Randy, where was he today? I thought he was coming to help bring the gifts home from the shower.
We aren't together anymore. So, I told him I need a space.
Oh, honey, I am so sorry. So he just gonna leave you so close to your due date?
Geraldine's eldest sister, Tamiko, had her suspicions about Geraldine's pregnancy. She never quite figured out her sister's due date, and she noticed her sister's fiancé was around less and less. Tamiko knew her younger sister well enough to know when mischief was afoot. And while she was excited for her, her intuition grew daily.
Is it cold feet? I know we had questions about your pregnancy, but you know, you have been guarded with everyone.
If you must know, we had an argument about the babies. He kept questioning me like he didn't trust me. And I don't need that type of stress. I'm just trying to have a happy pregnancy.
Well, shit, you told us the babies were due in December. And now you're telling us it's March. Doctors can be off a bit, but not that fucking much.
See, April, this is what I'm talking about. I thank y'all for the baby shower, but I'm tired. And I don't need this right now.
Geraldine escorts her sister out of her apartment and breaks down in tears. She felt the idea of having the family she always dreamed of was falling apart. But that's because it was. Randy was not wrong in his suspicion. Geraldine was never pregnant. In fact, in October of 2014, her positive pregnancy test was a chemical pregnancy. She was told that she would never be able to birth children of her own. Hello, I am Eric Aaron, and welcome to the fourth episode of The Real Monsters. In this episode, we will discuss the life and crimes of Geraldine R. Jones. This episode includes themes such as violence and murder, which may not be suitable for listeners under the age of 13. Please listen with caution.
Did you know? Monsters.
Christine R. Jones grew up in a two-parent household in Gary, Indiana. She is the youngest of three and was known to be loved, spoiled, and mischievous as a child. Her family values education heavily. She descends from a long line of teachers, which prompted her to graduate from Purdue University and become a teacher. Once she became a teacher, she knew she loved children. She worked her way to a principal position at the private school she began teaching at. Despite a successful teaching career, she did not have the time and opportunity to start a family of her own. Geraldine made the decision to resign from her principal position to take a less time-consuming job with the tax assessor office. She finally had the schedule to date and look for love to start a family. Before long, Geraldine met Randy, and her dream of a family was quickly becoming a vision. They were deeply in love and committed, so when she showed him the positive pregnancy test, they were excited to be parents. When Geraldine went to confirm her pregnancy, it was then she found out that she was not pregnant, but she would also never have children of her own. But that did not stop her from keeping up the facade with Randy and her family. Family and friends recall Geraldine being pleasantly excited about the arrival of her bundles of joy. She gained weight and even created a protruding belly to convince everyone of her pregnancy. Though she had the physical appearance of a woman with child, her timeline and story didn't have everyone convinced that all was well. Sometime between February and March of 2015, Geraldine informed her family that she went into labor. Of course, her family wanted to rush to her side. However, tragedy struck.
Girl, where are you calling me from?
Oh, this is the hospital phone.
Hospital? Is everything okay? Did you go into labor? Oh, shit, I'm on my way.
Hold up. No. I already delivered the twins.
Wait, what? Why didn't you call us? I'm coming up there.
No, I can't take it right now. Tamiko, Mama, Daddy, it's just too much. One of the...
Did something happen?
One of the babies didn't make it.
Oh, sissy. Oh, sister, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. What do you need from me?
April, I don't think I could talk to the rest of the family. I mean, you know how they get, especially Tamiko. Can you just let them know? I just need to make sure that my other baby is strong and healthy and
Don't even say that. I am here for you, whatever you need. I'll keep Daddy and Tamiko and him. I'll keep them in check.
Thank you. Look, I gotta go. They're about to bring Bella in, and I'll just call you later.
Okay, then. Call me if you need me.
I will. Bye.
Geraldine had told her family that she had lost one of the twins. With such a tragic loss, no one questioned her when she insisted that the family not visit her at the hospital. They simply believed that she was grieving. Geraldine was not grieving. She was executing the first phase of an elaborate plan to kidnap Samantha Fleming's baby, Serenity, and raise her as her own. In her mind, her family was convinced she had a baby. Now was a matter of obtaining one. In March of 2015, Samantha Fleming gave birth to a healthy baby girl, Serenity. Serenity was her third child, and she was excited to finally be in a position to raise one of her children in a stable and safe environment. Samantha had a hard life of ups and downs. When she gave birth to her eldest daughter, she was young and bounced around from place to place. She made the decision to sign custody over to her mother. Her second child was conceived with her husband. Due to the violent nature of their marriage, the state of Illinois did not see fit for her son to remain in her custody. He was placed in foster care. Despite the hardships in her life, Samantha persisted in getting custody of her children back. Samantha left her estranged husband and tried to build a new life. She met Stephen Stanley. They quickly fell in love. Stephen was the stability and support that she needed. Even when she discovered that she was pregnant from an encounter prior to their relationship, he committed to be the father baby Serenity would know and love. On April 6th, 2015, when Geraldine R. Jones showed up on her doorstep disguised as a caseworker for the state, Samantha and Stephen were taken off guard. It's late morning, and Samantha and Stephen are in bed attempting to gain a few minutes of sleep. Serenity has finally settled to sleep in the nearby bassinet. Samantha is exhausted. She is swollen and in slight pain from the C-section delivery she endured 17 days prior. A knock on the door rings throughout the stillness of their home.
Babe.
Yeah.
Can you get that?
What?
Steven.
What?
Door.
Oh.
Stephen opens the door to see Geraldine standing in the doorframe, dressed in business attire with a binder in tow.
Yeah. What?
Good morning. I'm Angela Grossman of Lake County DCS. Is this the Fleming residence?
Yeah. One sec. Sam! You can step inside. She'll be a moment.
But no, thank you. We are on a time crunch.
Is everything all right?
Yes, of course. I'm sorry. It's just a time-sensitive matter is all.
Good. Okay.
Hi. Can I help you?
Hello, Samantha. I'm Mrs. Grossman, your new case manager. We spoke on the phone a few days ago about your case up north.
Yeah, I remember. Is something wrong?
Oh, no. Nothing's wrong, dear. Nothing's wrong. You just have a court hearing this afternoon that I'm required to take you to for your son.
Samantha nearly jumped out of her skin. She has been working with the courts for months to get her son, Junior, out of the foster care system. When Angela Grossman called, she thought she finally received a caseworker that was on her side.
Junior? You got me a case that fast?
Like I told you, I took on your case personally when I read your files.
Oh my God. Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's great news, but why the short notice?
It does usually take longer. However, I submitted a special hearing court filing on Mrs. Fleming's behalf, so it's in a few hours. We probably should get going.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, let me just get the baby's diaper bag and my things.
And
oh my God.
This is to get custody of Junior?
Yes. It's a hearing to determine that.
Well, I'm happy. She misses him so much, and wants our family together. Let me go and help her so you two can be on your way.
Of course, please. I have to make a call anyway, so I'll be right here.
Samantha reappeared with her diaper bag, stroller, and car seat in tow. Stephen assisted the women in packing the car. That is when his intuition went into overdrive.
All right. Y'all set? Baby, let me know when you make it. You keep us updated with the news. Ms. Grossman, thank you.
No problem at all. That's my job.
Oh, by the way, know your tags are expired, right?
Yes. That's a bit unprofessional. I put in for new tags, but the system is so slow. But we'll be fine. We'll be fine getting to the courts.
Don't worry. Here, give me a kiss. I love you, and we'll see you later.
Samantha had originally kept in contact with her family through text most of the day. Her mother grew worried after the nature of her text messages began to change. Samantha usually texted with grammatical errors, but when she texted her family members that the judge told her that she did not deserve her children, including Serenity, the messages were in perfect spelling. Stephen attempted to make a missing person report with the police. He was told to give it a few days to see if Samantha would return. After two more days, Stephen attempted to make another report, this time pushing the police to investigate. Samantha Fleming was missing for 11 days after being lured into Jones's car under the impression she was going to get her son. On April 17, 2015, after a break in the case, the police were led to Geraldine's home in search of Samantha and her newborn, but were met by Jones's sister, Tamiko, holding a baby named Bella. Tamiko tells the officers Geraldine took off to Texas to stay with their mother and is now in the hospital after a failed attempt at suicide. Police questioned her about Bella. Tamiko revealed her family had a hard time believing Jones's elaborate tale of her pregnancy and baby Bella.
She said that one of the babies had died. So...
Wait, she called you and told you this, or...
Yes.
Tamiko tells detectives that when she arrived home from work that day, Geraldine was there waiting with the surviving baby.
She was just telling me that she was, like, really depressed. And I'm trying to, like, consult and say, well, you know what? People go through stuff like this all the time. I think, like, you know, you lose the baby, maybe you go through some postpartum or something.
A few days later, Geraldine left for Texas, leaving her newborn with her father.
I wanted to see, like, maybe if I could find, like, the little bracelet that they have when they take it off the arm or the foot or whatever, or something that showed us that she had a baby.
While speaking with Tamiko, a distinct smell caught the attention of the officers. While Tamiko thought it was just left behind trash, the officers suspected something different.
As Detective Sanderson is questioning Tamiko, something else catches his attention.
I could smell a faint, unusual odor.
I thought that, okay, well, she hasn't been here in a week. Maybe the garbage needs to be taken out or something.
Sanderson asks Tamiko to go outside while he and two uniformed officers look through the home.
We go into the bathroom and check in there. Then we walk immediately in the bedroom. Over in the corner, there's a closet, semi-dark. We both walk over there. Within a matter of a couple of seconds, we can see the tote. I can see the legs go up the wall. We both are like, hey, it's a body. At that point, we decide you have a crime scene.
Body was wrapped up in plastic wrap, was duct taped, and kind of stuffed into a very large plastic tote.
Geraldine Jones pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter on May 4th, 2018. She was sentenced to 30 years in prison and 10 years of probation on May 25th, 2018. Geraldine never spoke about the events that took place. Even in her interrogation, she called for a lawyer. It wasn't until her interview with Snap, Season 25, Episode 8, that she finally disclosed her version of the events.
I didn't want to tell my family and friends that I wasn't pregnant and that I couldn't have a baby. It made me feel less than a woman. And it made me question God, like, what was my purpose here then, if I can't be a mother?
According to Geraldine, after she learned she couldn't bear a child of her own, she began looking for one online.
Well, I went on the website and I posted a message on there. The content was, if anyone that's pregnant and don't feel like you can't handle the baby or something, contact me. I have an offer for you.
Geraldine claims that Sam reached out to her.
She told me that she was 2 months pregnant and that she couldn't keep the baby, but she will be interested in selling the baby. She wanted $2,000. I said, okay.
Geraldine also claims it was Sam's idea for her to pose as a DCS caseworker.
I said, okay, I'll come pick you up. She said, act like you're CPS. So I said, okay.
The purported plan was for Geraldine to bring Sam back home later that day without her daughter and with the story that Child Services had taken the baby from her. However, according to Geraldine, when they stopped at Geraldine's house in Gary, the two women got into an argument.
She wanted all the money then, and I told her I didn't have it all. We got into an argument, and we started fighting. And I grabbed the knife, and I started stabbing her.
According to the CDC, 6.1 million women in the United States between the ages of 15 and 44 will have difficulty getting pregnant or staying pregnant. For a number of women, their experience in womanhood has a strong connection to their ability to birth a child. There is a sense of shame and secrecy that comes attached to infertility. It is called infertility stigma. Infertility stigma is a phenomenon associated with various psychological and social tensions, especially for women. The societal pressures women face to become pregnant start from a very young age. We give girls dolls accompanied with diapers, strollers, baby food, baby clothes, and even magical milk disappearing bottles, all to prepare them for motherhood. As girls grow into teens, the greatest concern for parents, especially in the Black community, is for their daughters to avoid pregnancy at all costs. Because pregnancy is deemed the one life event that changes the course of a woman's life. While life accomplishments like obtaining an education or developing a successful career are nice, it always leads back to the seed planted as a child, which is motherhood. Society places an unspoken value on a woman's ability to birth. Even Geraldine acknowledged the role infertility stigma played in her crime. While infertility stigma is a significant life stressor, it is not an excuse to take another's life, especially when it robs them of the opportunity to be the mother they wanted to be to their children. We all can agree that Geraldine Jones committed a monstrous act, but is she a monster? We must protect the Samanthas and the Geraldines. When we say protect women, we have to be committed to protecting them in all forms, even if that means challenging the social norms that have been in place for generations. Thank you for listening. This is episode 4 of The Real Monsters. I am your host, Eric Aaron. Please be safe and be vigilant, because we are all we got and we are everything. The reenactments in this episode are fictional re-imaging of actual events. This episode was written by Derek McKinney and Liz Sims. This episode was edited by Liz Sims. This episode was recorded, mixed, and sound designed by Eric Aaron. Samantha is played by Shira McDuffie. Geraldine is played by Brittany Taylor. April is played by Jamila Gonzalez. Stephen is played by Jared Weathers, and Tamiko is played by Chandrea Finney.